as we bring in our buddy Scott Petrak from the Chronicle Telegram, who covers the Browns and does a great job of it. Brownzone.com, where you can read all of his work. Scott, good morning.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Scott,
how about this? Since, according to footballreference.com, according to them, since leaving Tampa Bay, Jameis Winston is 7-4 as a starting quarterback. Interesting.
Yeah, if you look at some of those stats that he put up when he went to New Orleans, he sat behind Drew Brees, I want to say in 2020, and then he started the first seven games in 21, I think, and got hurt, and then his first three games in 22. But in 21, I think they were 5-2 to start the year, and he was like 14 touchdowns and three picks. And he said last week that being behind Drew Brees and being with Sean Payton really changed how he approached playing the position. So, you know, obviously he could have thrown some picks yesterday, but I do think that he has matured as he's gotten older and probably doesn't make as many mistakes as he used to.
It was clearly a Joe Flacco-like performance and a Joe Flacco-like play called game, even though there was a different guy calling the plays yesterday, Scott.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I don't think there were any plays that Ken Dorsey called that we hadn't seen Kevin Stefanski call 100 times before. Now, maybe the order of them is different. You know, as a play caller, I think that is certainly possible. But we've seen all those routes. We've seen all those plays. It's interesting that 38-yard winner to Cedric Tillman. You know, maybe Kevin Stefanski isn't as aggressive in that situation. We won't know that. It's obviously worked out great. You got to match up with the safety for the touchdown. But, yeah, it's what we've seen Kevin Stefanski call in the past. It's what we saw him call with Jacoby Brissett and Baker Mayfield and Joe Flacco. They tried to call those plays with Deshaun Watson plenty of times and didn't have the same success. You know, you need a quarterback to run that system that stands in the pocket, hangs in there, and isn't afraid to stretch the field and give his receivers a chance. And, you know, Watson struggled with that. The quick decisions, hanging in the pocket, you know, those were the issues, and Winston just did a better job. Not that the protection wasn't better. And, you know, you can't just point to one thing.
No.
But having a quarterback that hangs in there and makes big throws down the field changes everything about the offense.
All right, what was the difference in the play calling yesterday? And you tell me the impact of Ken Dorsey versus Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah, see, I think you can easily separate Deshaun Watson to Jameis Winston and talk about what those differences were. I don't think it's nearly as easy to do that from a play calling perspective. Like I said, I've seen those plays run a billion times with Kevin Stefanski calling them. So I don't know if it would have made any difference, the play caller. And this isn't taking it away from Ken Dorsey. I thought he did a good job. They moved the ball up and down the field. But I thought Kevin Stefanski, throughout his 4.5 years as a play caller, has done a really good job most of the time. So maybe it's just a change and a spark, and you get a new quarterback, so why not make the change to the coordinator? I did think it was interesting when Winston would talk about how in the beginning of the week, Kevin Stefanski said, this is the change I'm making, and went in on it and didn't hide from it. And that's a big change. We know that that's a big change for Kevin Stefanski. And I do think some players responded to, hey, my coach is willing to give this up. He's willing to try something new. So maybe that was the bigger impact than the actual plays being called.
If Jameis Winston goes out and plays reasonably well the rest of the season, there's no possible way they could go back to Deshaun Watson next year, is there? And I say that just from a football, a PR standpoint, and not that Jameis Winston would actually be the guy next year. It's just real clear that, okay, somebody else quarterbacking this team is more successful than Deshaun Watson. But I wonder, you know, first of all, is there any way you think they could go back to it if Deshaun or DTR, if DTR ends up being the quarterback, is reasonably successful? And then how do the Browns go about that?
Yeah, I don't think you can bring back Watson as your starter. I mean, you could bring him back as a backup because you're paying him a ton of money, and maybe financially and salary cap wise, you just can't afford to part with him. I could see that scenario, but I don't see a way where you head into the offseason program or training camp or whatever and say Watson's the guy. You just haven't seen enough from him on the field, and that's number one. But also, how could you count on him? The guy hasn't been on the field for a full season since 2020. How do you put all your eggs in that basket again? It made some sense this year, thinking he was healthy coming off the shoulder. He played pretty well when he played last year, and you had 3 years left on the contract. Mm-hmm. But those things have changed. It's another year with an injury. He's getting older. It's only 2 years left on the contract. All those factors. And then the biggest one is when other people play quarterback, the offense is better. And I don't know how you can ignore that if you're anybody in that organization.
Yeah, I kind of want to dig into that because, you know, with the offensive line yesterday and what we were able to saw with Teller back, and I mean, let's face it, the offensive line only gave up two sacks yesterday.
And DeJuan Jones.
And DeJuan Jones looked comfortable for the first time all season. You know, just break that down and tell me, is that all on the quarterback?
It's not all on the quarterback. And that's why it's really hard to say, okay, this change, and that's the reason. Because there's a million factors. The receivers were open and caught passes. The line protected better. And Kevin Stefanski brought that up right away. Joe Bitonio mentioned, yeah, you get Wyatt Teller back. He's a really good player at right guard. Ethan Posick is in his second game back after dealing with some knee injuries. He's getting healthier. You have DeJuan Jones, who I think is getting healthier. He had a couple weeks where he was on the bench, and whatever impact that has on a player, came back, gets his chance at left tackle, works really hard during the week, and played pretty well. So I think those things are true, that helped the protection. But what can't be ignored is a quarterback that knows where to go with the ball, a quarterback that doesn't bail at the first sign of a compromised pocket and run into sacks, those also skew the sack numbers. So I think the protection is better, but I also think having Winston running the show and getting the ball out of his hand and standing in the pocket while, you know, the rush was closing in, I think that also makes the line look better, and it makes the protection, it reduces those sack numbers.
Before we get to the defense, the wide receivers looked pretty good yesterday. Mm-hmm. You had four guys, including David Njoku, with five catches and at least 60 yards. Quarterback play or opportunity, for especially for a guy like Cedric Tillman? But Elijah Moore looked like he's never looked here before.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to the quarterback. He gave those guys a bunch of opportunities. Again, it's not only that. I mean, when you convert some third downs, which the Browns did yesterday for, you know, one of the few times this year, then it gives you more plays, and it gives you more chances to get the ball to guys. All those things are factors. But the biggest factor is a quarterback that gives these guys a chance. So on those plays that we would watch and go, well, why didn't Winston throw to Judy on a deep cross? Winston threw to Judy on a deep cross. Or he threw the out to Elijah Moore when maybe Watson didn't think it was open, and Winston threw it into tight coverage and made the throw. I think that's the biggest reason those guys look better. And, yes, they're getting more opportunities without Amari Cooper here. Cedric Tillman certainly. But Elijah Moore's played a ton this season. Cedric Tillman's played a lot this season. Not as much as he did yesterday, but a lot. So, I would say that the quarterback change was the biggest factor in that.
How about the team's ability to hold Derrick Henry under 75 yards? I know he only had 11 carries, and it felt like Harbaugh was like, I think he felt like they needed a pass at the end of the game and not run. But I think that says something about the defense. And let's be honest, you know, Baltimore had zero respect for the Browns' defense coming out of the gate on this thing when they decided to go for it on fourth down in the first drive.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why they went for it, and you got the best offense in the league, but that was a huge play. You know, we focus on the last drive, and obviously that's important, but keeping Baltimore from scoring on the first drive is huge. They did a really good job against Derrick Henry, and I talked to guys last week, and I wrote a story, I think it was Friday, that Derrick Henry's the kind of guy that tests the commitment of the defense, especially when you've lost five in a row and you're 1-6, because you have to bring it against Derrick Henry. If not, you get run over or you look silly. You know, you look like you're not trying, right? You're making those business decisions. And the Browns did not shy away from Derrick Henry. They had the 39-yard run where Miles kind of gets blocked inside and Greg Newsom has the edge and misses him at the line of scrimmage. That was it. Other than that, I think it was 3 yards of carry, the big fourth down stop, like you mentioned. So I thought the defense played really well. You can only hold Lamar so often. He's just unbelievable, so elusive. But taking the Henry threat away and not making that a 1-2 monster gave him the ability to win the game.
The one concern I had about the defense, and it was last year, was kind of like situational defense. And I thought the same thing yesterday. Man, you need a stop here. You got to get a stop. And they didn't. You know, Baltimore went down and scored, and then Baltimore went down and put themselves in position to win the game. Well, what's going on there? That's a little weird to me that has happened more often than you would think from what I think is a really good unit.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Jeff. I don't know if that's just, you know, there's so much sense of urgency there for the offense that, you know, the defense has a hard time not keeping up with it. But, you know, the offense is going to make some plays, and that's when the offense makes them. Not to use an excuse, but they're missing Denzel Ward, which he's their best corner, and that changes how they can cover. JOK wasn't in the game for that fourth quarter, and that makes a difference because he's, you know, one of their three best players on defense. So, but it's certainly an area that needs to be addressed. And if they had given up that last touchdown, then you could take them to complete task. But the fact that they got the stop at the end when they needed, even though it was a hard spot for Baltimore to be in, I think that does, it certainly counts in the defense's favor and helps counter the touchdown they gave up on the drive before.
How concerned are we with Denzel's concussion? What is this, six now?
Six.
And that's just at the NFL level. Wow. Correct. Who knows what happened at Ohio State or at Nordonia? So I don't. This sounds like serious family conversation once you get it. I mean, we don't know what the severity was of yesterday because every concussion is different. But,
right.
I mean, we've already walked down this road with him prior to the season starting. And, you know, I wish him health first before, you know, I love watching him play, but I'd much rather see him, you know, have a healthy, active life with his family.
No, I completely agree, Andy. And, I mean, it's been a discussion with Denzel for years. You know, I think we started talking about it when he got number four, Denzel. And he has been steadfast that he loves to play football. He can't think of himself doing anything else. He took his after the one in training camp, he took his family with him to see a specialist in Pittsburgh so they could have their questions answered. And he said they came away from there feeling good. He said it was more about his family than him, that, you know, he was committed to playing, but they wanted to hear the specialist. And he says the specialist tell him, as long as you wait long enough to return, there's no danger in the number of concussions, that it resets. Now, I'm just telling you what he said, that it resets. So I expect them to give him a lot of time with this one. Luckily, from a football perspective, they have the bye coming up after this game, so you get a couple of weeks off. But, yeah, it's certainly concerning. I think every time it happens, he and his family have to talk about it, whether it's worth it. And you see the same thing going on with Tua down in Miami, and he comes back. And I understand it from a player perspective, but yeah, it is a conversation, and it's certainly a worry watching it.
Yeah, I also think that one of the interesting parts about concussions, I think that technology might start. We're never going to know though, because they can't tell the CTE stuff until they can figure out CTE while you're still with us, right? I don't know whether, but it does seem like there's some technology coming up down the road that might be able to curb the return to play time on this concussion. But you got to wonder how long that's going to take. But it does sound like there's some of that stuff in the pipeline coming up.
Yeah, some blood tests and stuff they can do. Yeah, you've heard about that for a while. I was on a tour yesterday. We had the NFL's head medical guy and then the Browns head doctor. And they walked us through like some game day procedures. And one of them was how they deal with concussions. We got to go in the blue medical tent. And yeah, it was really interesting. And they said that if you rule a guy out, that means he has a concussion. But the way the Browns said it yesterday was right away they weren't sure if Denzel had a concussion, which seems to me that, I don't know if you can say it wasn't as serious, but there were questions whether or not he was okay, whether he wasn't okay, and then eventually he got diagnosed with the concussion.
Part of that, though, Scott, is, I mean, you're relying on the athlete to tell you that they're suffering symptoms.
Right. Well, they do they do a test in the
baseline,
you know,
test
in the thing, and then they take him in the locker room, do a more extensive test, and even then they weren't ready to say it was a concussion for a while. But yeah, and you know, it the way it happened too, he left after the first defensive play of the third quarter. Mm-hmm. And it was a sack where he wasn't involved in a play. So I don't know, I haven't seen it yet rewatching the game, whether he gets hit away from the ball or maybe it happened in the first half and running around to start the third quarter, he just didn't feel right. So all those things are certainly concerning for just Denzel as a person.
Scott Petrak joining us from the Chronicle-Telegram, brownzone.com, where you can read all of Scott's coverage. Does a game like yesterday, maybe what we'll see what happens against the Chargers, change anything philosophy-wise heading into the trade deadline?
I think it could. I think if they win Sunday to get to 3-6 and 1-2 in a row, and the players feel like, I mean, just talking to guys after the game, they haven't given up on the playoffs. You know, Myles Garrett's talking about it. Everybody's talking, or a lot of guys are still hanging on to that hope. And I think if you're the Browns, is trading player X for a fifth-round draft pick worth it enough to compromise your play the rest of the season? And that's a tough decision that Andrew Berry's going to make. Now, even if they win against the Chargers, I think you'll see a player or two get traded if they can get the right return. You know, is that Za'Darius Smith for a third-round pick? I think they probably still make that trade. But I don't think it would be the quote-unquote fire sale that I was anticipating if, you know, they go into the bye 1-8 versus 3-6.
Thank you, sir. Always appreciate your joining us on Mondays.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, guys.
Brownzone.com. Brownzone.com, where you can read all of Scott's work as he does a tremendous job of covering the Browns. We love your thoughts. You know, the offense was better yesterday. I don't think there's any question. I don't think if the quarterbacks go out and play something that resembles what we saw yesterday, and again, the one, you know, there's always seems to be one little caveat. Yesterday's caveat is the Ravens, though historically a really good defense, have the worst pass defense in the NFL right now. Right now, if the quarterbacks can keep going, is there any way that you could buy Deshaun Watson as the starting quarterback of this team next year? I personally don't think so. It's Baskin and Phelps here on The Fan. Talking about Jameis Winston as opposed to Deshaun Watson. Andy, the bad thing here for Deshaun, I think in this situation, substitute the name Joe Flacco for Jameis Winston and you have the exact same story. And this year you brought in a different offensive coordinator and tried to tweak some things in the offense to make it more Deshaun Watson friendly, and Deshaun didn't play as well as he played last year. I mean, Deshaun has not had a 300-yard passing game since he's been a Cleveland Brown. Joe Flacco played in 5 games in the regular season and had 4. Jameis Winston has started 1 game and has had 1. So think about that. Deshaun substitutes Flacco and Watson and Winston, guys with some experience, have had 300-yard passing games in 5 of their 6 starts. And Deshaun hasn't had any in his, 17 games? 19 games as starting quarterback of the Browns.
If it was any other quarterback and you didn't have to worry about the contract,
there's no,
you'd turn the page.
Without question. And you know, I hate to say that about Deshaun from a football standpoint. I mean, when he was in Houston, he was dynamite. I mean, he was really good. We didn't see that guy this year. We saw it at times last year, I thought, Andy. In his first year, you know, he had some moments, but he clearly has not been the same quarterback. And the real damning part of it is you have two guys who other teams gave up on. You know, the Ravens moved on from Joe Flacco.
Right.
The Jets moved on from Joe Flacco. The Bucks and the Saints moved on from Jameis Winston. But clearly both of those guys, you know, are competent NFL quarterbacks. And they step into this same offense with the same plays, different play caller for Jameis, and they light it up. I mean, that it's nothing but damning for Deshaun. And to think otherwise, Andy, I think people are just trying to create a narrative. If anybody is, I think they're just trying to create a narrative that doesn't exist. I mean, clearly, Deshaun hasn't worked here, and the other guys have. And that should tell you all you need to know about things moving forward. I can't even imagine if Jameis, and I wouldn't rule out, and I this is not about the organization, this is about the way pro sports works. I wouldn't rule out Jameis as an outside trade candidate by the trade deadline. If he go, if somebody needs a quarterback and he goes out and plays well, and the Browns really like DTR, and I'm putting a lot of things together that I don't know are the case. The Browns really like DTR as a long-term option, and Jameis is in a one-year contract situation and might not be back next year. I couldn't rule out the Browns trading him. I mean, if I'm the Las Vegas Raiders, man, I'd take Jameis in a heartbeat over Gardner Minshew, over Aiden O'Connell.
All right, so are we cheering for him to have a good game this week or not?
Absolutely, a good game this week.
I do too, but does that make him more of a viable option to trade?
I don't know that anybody wants
especially
him right now.
Especially if a week ago you were willing to say, you know what, we're going with DTR over Jameis Winston. I mean, that was the decision 1 week ago. Yeah.
It's real clear. Other quarterbacks play better here than Deshaun Watson has. And that to me puts the organization in a very difficult spot that they put themselves in. You know, they thought they were getting one thing and they haven't received that from Deshaun. So they have decisions to make this offseason. They might have decisions to make this season that will affect next season, and that's when that trade deadline comes around. You know, if they get interesting offers. Jason Solon, Jay, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jay.
What's up, y'all? Love the show.
Hey, love you, man. Love you. What do you got for us?
I don't love you, Jay. I don't know you well enough, but
hey,
I do appreciate you listening and calling.
Wow, that is hurtful.
I don't love Jay personally, and he doesn't love us personally. He loves our show, and we thank him for
this
that.
This is professional love, Jeff.
Well, now that I can give you.
Please ignore the jerk in the corner.
Yeah, no, Jay, you seem like a really nice fella.
You know what?
I reserve that love for, you know.
Jeff
Baskin, I don't love you. I like you.
Yeah, but you need to get in touch with your inner self there. Come on, man.
Jay, thank you.
Okay, this is what I'm saying. This is love. love is when you can get somebody upset but still love them and still call back the next day.
That's
there
right. Yeah.
Okay.
Jeff and I live that every day.
All the stuff that you're talking about, does that mean we're going to still keep Stefanski? Because I'm really trying to get Shador and Deion Sanders in Cleveland next year.
Wow.
That's all I have to say.
Jay, you can call back, even though I hate that idea. Although I hear Shador might be a really nice NFL quarterback.
I think Jeff is now saying that he loves you based on what you just said.
Jay, I'm really fond of you. I was going to bring this up.
Can't
later.
You be in touch with your inner feelings and just be able to tell someone you love them?
I don't know, Jay.
How can I love him? I do because he takes the time, whether
no,
he's got
you don't
crazy,
love him, you're really happy that
whether
he
he's got crazy
to
ideas that I want nothing to do with or not,
the
I still appreciate
love,
him.
The word love needs to be reserved, Andy.
Jeff.
You don't love Jay. You've never met Jay.
All we need is love, Jeff.
You might love Jay Crawford. He's a buddy. You've worked with him.
Long-time friend, yes.
Yeah.
Jeff. Sometimes you need to find that inner monologue and calm it down just a little. Wait, did I just think that?
I don't want to go too far here. Does it matter to you? And Dan threw this out last week, and I thought he was completely wrong, and I still think he's completely wrong. Does Kevin Stefanski get credit for a win yesterday?
Yes, he's the head coach.
That's what I think.
100%.
To me, it doesn't diminish his abilities as a head coach because he had a different play caller yesterday. Doesn't make me think, oh, I don't need him as a head coach then. Makes me think, all right, there.
He was fired up after the game.
He made a move as a head coach, and it paid off yesterday.
Yes.
I think they would have done just as well with Kevin calling plays yesterday.
I don't disagree with you.
Top Cat is in Cleveland. Top Cat.
Yeah, guys. I don't want to hear any crying for Deshaun. I wish him the best. It was a horrible thing to see on TV when he got hurt. I've never been his biggest fan. I don't believe he was ever able to read defenses. And the problem we have here now is Winston is not the answer, and I don't believe DTR is the answer either.
Well, that might be Top Cat, and that's okay. You know, they can figure out who can be the quarterback next year. I think what they really need to figure out is maybe who shouldn't be the quarterback next year.
And Jeff, my only problem with that is what happens when neither of these guys are.
Well, you got to go get one, Top Cat. I mean, I don't want to go here yet. Sam Darnold's a free agent. Atlanta has Kirk Cousins, and they drafted Michael Penix. I mean, there are going to be some guys available who can be competent quarterbacks, like maybe Jameis Winston. So, but I think the organization has a bunch of games left, a bunch of time left to figure out how do we move on here. And I think that's personally what they need to do. On Baskin and Phelps today with the Cleveland Browns. Browns coming off a win over the Baltimore Ravens yesterday.
I don't feel like there's a lot of therapy needed today. I think people are very happy, and they're where they want to be, and some people don't want to get their happiness off their chest, and I've heard very few people be angry.
They don't want to share their happiness. They want to keep it inside because it makes them feel warm and fuzzy.
Do we have to go back to the love segment of just 15 minutes ago? I don't think so.
I can't handle any more love talk.
No, it was weird.
Really was. Of course, I'm not the guy saying I love random callers.
He said he loves us. And so
he said he loved the show. He didn't say anything about you or me personally.
I said we love you too. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, a hug a day keeps the doctor away.
If Jay was a plumber, I could say, Jay, I love your plumbing work. I don't know Jay personally.
Nobody knows PVC the way you do, Jay. Let me just say that.
We're here for TLC, Andy, not PVC.
You're coming up with some pretty good lines today.
What?
Do you buy a book?
No, I've spent some time. When your uncle is a plumber and your father is an electrician, you learn these things.
It's beautiful. Casey's in Jacksonville, Florida, where they no longer have Christian Kirk at wide receiver. Ooh, that's tough. Broken collarbone out for the season, Casey.
Hey, that's all right. They're not diehard fans like you guys up there.
There you go. So,
pretty fair weather down here. But hey, we'll say you guys. The coach Kevin Stefanski, I don't understand what the fuss is all about. With you guys have been to the playoffs for a couple years now, and they want to hammer that coach. I don't know if he's the guy who made the $230 million mistake, so I don't know who's to blame there. And my next thing is, who do you guys lining up for a quarterback? You guys want to draft one? Because I don't think DTR is the answer, and I sure as don't think Deshaun Watson is. So I'll get your guys' thoughts, and I'll let you go. You guys have a good one.
Casey, thank you very much. I don't know who the quarterback of this team is next year.
I have no idea.
You know who I'd be okay with? If he's competent the rest of the way, Jameis Winston.
Yeah, I mean, he'll let him go earn the opportunity to be the starting quarterback next year. That's what I would like to see. But I'm telling you, when you look at checkbooks, I'm not going to be surprised if Deshaun Watson is under center for game one of next year, if he can play. As soon as he's healthy, I would not be surprised if he was under center. I know a lot of people woke up yesterday and said, well, if he didn't have the job before yesterday, the way Jameis played and the way they called that game kind of made it sound like he's done, that we'll never see him again. As long as that contract lives, I find that very, very hard to believe.
What would you do, though?
I would make him the backup at this point until he could prove that he's... Here's the problem. We're not using our eyes. Right. We're using our checkbook, right? You've got to look at it from the standpoint is what... And Kevin
said
basing it
on one game.
But the problem is, like you said, you talked about for Flacco,
well.
Too. Sometimes you just have to admit that you're wrong, and maybe it was the worst trade in NFL history. And guess what? There will be another one that's worse somewhere down the road.
People in Minnesota might disagree
with you on
that.
So just keep going. I don't know, Jeff. We didn't get a whole lot of nothing.
How'd that Herschel Walker thing work out for them? Folks in Dallas loved
it. Did they get over it?
Yeah, they kind of
did. Are people now saying this is the worst trade in NFL history?
Yes, people kind of are.
Well, 10 years from now or 10 minutes from now, people say the next trade is the worst trade in NFL history? Yes. The problem is they broke the glass ceiling on the contract stuff with guaranteed money.
That's why it's going to stick. Quarterbacks, now the cost of doing business is outrageous for a quarterback. Quarterbacks across America thank the Browns.
Reality will set in at some point, though, but that's all.
And as far as the coach, I'm not interested in we got the impression there from Jacksonville that, you know, not happy with the coach. I think we have a fine head coach, and I don't think there's any reason to change head coaches.
I'm fine with him.
Zach is in Cleveland. Hello, Zach.
Hi, Zach. How are you?
Guys, that was an emotional win yesterday. First point I want to make is obviously condolences to Jim's family. From a young age, that's been the voice of the Browns for me, as well as obviously the rest of the city. But it's gotten me through some tough times, you know, riding home early from a game with my dad when we're getting whooped on. And Jim made it feel like you're sitting there with one of your buddies and that he's going through it with you. Him and Deke did a great job of that. And I think transitioning now, I can now show my girlfriend's kids, Zagura and Siciliano up in the booth. And they're doing a great job. So it's been seamless. I want to give those guys a huge shout out too. They're doing awesome. Brought chills yesterday, definitely.
Well said.
This is what our team looks like, guys, with a competent quarterback.
It's pretty clear, isn't it, Zach?
Yeah, I mean, Jeff, I've been calling you guys for a couple weeks, calling for Ken's job, and I don't think that was even Ken's playbook yesterday. It's Kevin's playbook. You guys have been saying it. We've seen those plays all season. Deshaun just couldn't hit him. Obviously, wish him the best. You never want to see anybody get injured, but, nope. Man, these guys can keep their foot on the gas. I don't know what they can accomplish. I don't know if it's playoffs or what, but they're playing for something, and they were definitely playing for Jim yesterday, man. He was there. That Justin Tucker doesn't miss a kick. I mean, Jim was blowing some air down from heaven and blew that thing away. He bounced one through for Dustin, ripped the ball out of Kyle Hamilton's hands. I mean, he intercepts that 10 times out of 10, not even 9 times out of 10. I don't know how he dropped that
yet. I don't know how he dropped that either, Zach.
That was special yesterday, guys. Hopefully we can keep rolling with this and see where we end up, guys.
All right, Zach, thank you very much. Appreciate that. Yesterday, after the passing of Jim Donovan over the weekend, obviously a lot of things at the stadium, a lot of things on our broadcast about Jim. Andy, we just both thought, you know, Jim did a really nice job doing the Browns games. I thought he was outstanding. And his energy, his enthusiasm, his preparation, his I used the word yesterday on the pregame show, precision. In the way he did a game from a fellow broadcaster standpoint was something I always admired. And I thought he was very, very good at what he did. And after he retired from the Browns gig, I told him that started when he was doing the NFL on NBC. And he just carried over into the Browns. And he was really good doing the NFL games on NBC. And last night on the Monday night game, I had forgotten this.
Sunday.
The Sunday night game last night. NBC mentioned Jim and did a little tribute to him, which was very nice, and showed a picture of him with Chris Collinsworth doing a game.
Yeah.
And as Mike Tirico pointed out, he was your first broadcast partner when you came to NBC. I had forgotten that. Mm. And so it was nice of NBC to do that.
I thought we basically did a 4-hour celebration of life for the pregame show. It really, football was absolutely...
Throughout the whole pregame show.
Yeah, I mean, it was secondary. We heard some great stories along the way. And, you know, it's difficult. It's also, like, I don't know. I think he was smiling on this team yesterday. There were some plays. You know, the sun. I mean, how does that happen? An interception that should have been caught. And just, it's sad. The whole thing is sad. But, as I drove into the game yesterday, I must have passed 5 or 6 billboards.
That was really nice.
It was just really
very
cool.
Nice tribute.
I don't know who did that, but they deserve a bravo. And you know, as you drive around town right now, and you see, and still on the stadium this morning when I drove into work today, as I was coming in on I-90 and got off over by
billboard
the stadium
right here at Playhouse Square too.
Oh, I didn't see that one. I saw the one on the stadium itself, the one that sits on the back of the dog pound.
Yeah.
On the eastbound side of the. The stadium, I just thought, what a beautiful tribute Northeast Ohio did. Even in the press box yesterday, they had three really cool pictures of Jim and some flowers out. And it was just, yesterday was a very, very heavy heart day. And I think, you know, it's interesting as, you know, we look at it from our perspective, which I think ours is a little different than everybody else's is, Jeff, just because, you know, we're in the business and we see this. And it also made me think of, you know, the voices that were also there for him, for this team along the way too. And, you know, I thought about Nev for a little while yesterday. I thought about Gibb. I thought about Casey. I thought about all those, you know, these great voices that have filled the airwaves. And you know, Jim is there, and he'll always be the voice of this team for this century. And it's sometimes it's just difficult to process. And I don't know. I thought it was really cool that Kevin and Andrew went over the house last night and presented the game ball to his wife and his daughter. That picture's on social media, and all the pictures that were out on social media yesterday were outstanding. And it was just this great tribute. And he had so much life in those pictures. He was always smiling, and he really, really battled. And we talked about this yesterday on the pregame show that, you know, we were listening to the preseason games, and it's hard to believe that game in Seattle was Jim's last one. But
yeah,
you know, we had both said after that Seattle game, but Jim sounded the way he always did. He sounded a little softer.
His voice wasn't obviously. Think about the treatments and everything that he had been going through.
Yeah, and that
the only time, Andy, I ever noticed anything over the last, I mean, he'd been fighting things for almost since he became
years.
The voice of the Browns.
Yeah.
You know, literally, it was like the year after he found out that he was sick.
Mm-hmm.
And so the entire time he was voice of the Browns, he was fighting this. And the only time I ever noticed a thing was in the preseason.
This year.
Yeah, and it was just in his voice a little bit. And I honestly, when I heard him, I thought, that's great. He'll knock that out.
I thought the same thing, especially the Seattle game.
Yeah, I thought that voice will come back,
no
problem.
I was talking to somebody the other day, and he was really, really struggling on that Seattle game.
Yeah,
really struggling.
But I thought, okay, that's it. Because the play call, the precision that I've always admired so much, it was there. Just the voice was a little off, and I thought that would come back.
I have never, ever met anybody in our business that had just faster, quick wit and the ability to retain knowledge quickly. I don't know how many of you know this, but Jim didn't do a 6-11 sportscast with Scripps. Never did. I think he had like 6 words written down on a piece of paper, and he would go over there and do a sportscast. And it was, you know, he would sit there and he would talk and tell you a story for 3 minutes, no matter what it was. And it was always, you know, it was always, I'll never forget the first day I worked at Channel 3, how I was just blown away by the fact that, like, for me, if it was a 6 o'clock newscast, I'd definitely be in my seat by 4, making sure that I knew of every second that I was going to spend on the air. And Jim already knew everything that was going on. And he would sit there with Jeff Kiviak, who was his producer and still does a lot of stuff with the Browns Network, and, you know, and just really, I think about, especially in the last 24, 48 hours, I've been thinking about Yak, and I've been thinking about Deke a lot, because they were just absolutely super close with him. And just like you talk about family, those two guys were family for him. And, you know, Jim truly trusted Yak more than any other, you know, outside of his family, I'm sure, just trusted him in a way that just everyone should have a friend that close that will always have their back. And I know it's been rough. I know it's really rough for Deke right now, because I was there for the legend. I emceed the Legends induction, and the Browns kind of, you know, had a feel for what was going on here, and they knew, hey, let's get Jimmy in the Legends while Jimmy knows that he's in the Legends. And I give say bravo to the team for that too. But I just sitting on stage with Deke and just being there was just surreal, and just trying to understand that and just to have the emotion and the feeling for Deke. Both those guys, I feel for those guys today too, and especially. But I think, you know, once we get out of this in the next, you know, not get out of this, but just I think when you remember, I love hearing all these great stories about how he was the voice of your Sundays in the fall. And that's what I think is the lasting impact of Jim Donovan and the way he was able to relate to the folks of Northeast Ohio. And it's really something special, and I think every sportscaster should aspire to reach that kind of bond with a city, because it meant that he cared.
It's Baskin and Phelps here on The Fan.